Hello and welcome back to the Behind the Collective podcast. Today's episode has been converted from a recent webinar delivered as part of the AWI and TLC partner program. We want to make sure this information is as accessible as possible, and you can head to our website and visit the AWI partner program tab to watch the full webinar recording, including any of the infographics or examples that Dr. Mick refers to. But the beauty of a podcast though is that you can simply listen along while you're on the go, whether you're driving in the cab of a tractor or out and about during the day. With that, let's jump straight on into the webinar. Thank you so much for everyone who's jumped on or still jumping on. My name's Tiff Davey and I work for the Livestock Collective. This webinar is part of the AWI and TLC partner program, and it's about connecting and supporting WA wool growers. On that note, our 2026 survey is live and I'll pop it in the chat later and I can email it out as well, because we use that feedback to decide which webinar topics to run, which events to attend and what you want to see and hear from us. So I'll post the link to the chat, but I really encourage you to take a few minutes to complete it, as your input really does guide us over the next 6 months as to what we deliver. As always, this webinar will be recorded and sent out to you, as well as converted into a podcast, so it's easy to listen after if you want to go back to anything. And a few housekeeping things, please keep yourself on mute. You can send questions to my mobile number if you want to be anonymous. I again will pop that in the chat shortly, or you can chat in the chat as we go along, but we answer questions at the end of the webinar. And with that, let's get into it. I'll hand over to you, Dr. Mick, from Genstock. You can firstly introduce yourself and then get going.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for coming on tonight. My name's Michaela. Most people refer to me as Mick, as it's far easier. And I'm based down in Cogenup, but travel throughout the sheep areas of WA, solely working with sheep. So what we wanted to talk to you guys about tonight is about building your flock, boosting your lambs and backing your future. It's all about getting as many lambs on ground as possible. So let's get into it. So we're looking a lot better in the sheep industry in WA, and there's no doubt we've weathered a lot of challenges. The seasonal variability, the live export decision, our poor markets and our strong cropping competition. It's all really been quite difficult, but we're really at that turning point. And it's looking, the market signals are looking really good. Our ewe flock is estimated at the moment to be below 8 million head, which we're all about boosting those numbers. And in order to do that, we need to be getting as many lambs on the ground as we possibly can, because this is our opportunity now to rebuild our flock, not just in numbers, but also be thinking about fertility, survivability and lifetime performance, so that we can make the most out of these positive trends within the sheep industry. In order to do this, we may be retaining ewes, joining older ewes, looking at buying in ewes, or even mating ewe lambs to get as many on the ground as possible. Some of you may even be considering remating dry ewes to capitalise on these confidence within the market. But in order to do this, we need to make sure that every ewe that we're joining, and making sure every ewe that we join has the opportunity to conceive, so that we're making sure every lamb that's dropped on the ground counts. And we feel like the opportunity to capitalise on this is now. So let's talk about what we can control, because there's so many things we can't control within the sheep industry. So what can we control? It's not about looking at it the day the rams go in with our ewes. We need to be thinking about it beforehand, because we need to be thinking about those points within that cycle of a ewe where we can have a positive impact. If we only started looking at it at the day that the rams go out, we've missed quite a few opportunities there. Because if action only happens at joining or even at scanning, we're making reactive decisions. We're not making proactive decisions. And it's really hard to, if we don't get it right at the start, our setbacks can set us back further where we're being reactive rather than proactive. And I've seen that with things in the past with flocks that I've dealt with, and just it can maybe just even a minor slight change that makes it easier within your system. And all these decisions you make have to be ones that work within your system. It may not work for your neighbor, it may not work for your mate, but it's what works within your system. Okay. So one of the first things is considering what yous are fit to join. Okay, it's one of those things that we can control. The ability of you to successfully conceive, carry a pregnancy to full term, and give birth to a lamb that then survives, and raising of that lamb really accounts for our success. It's not only conception rate, but it's also lamb survivability that is our reproductive success, right? So something that we can do is do a pre-joining ewe assessment, okay, to lift both of those outcomes, conception rate and lamb survivability. It can be a real quick hands-on where we're checking the udder, body condition score, we're looking at the age, we're looking at lameness, we're looking at structure to pull out those ewes that aren't going to be able to have reproductive success. And we may be able to benefit from markets by culling those ewes at prices as they stand, rather than putting them through, putting all our inputs into a ewe that may conceive, then lose a lamb, or may not even conceive at all. Okay? Research has shown within commercial flocks that an unfit ewe is 4.4 times more likely to scan empty and 3 times more likely to die between joining and marking, right? So they're big losses. We put a lot of inputs into that ewe and we're not getting our returns. Also, a lamb that is born from an unfit ewe with bad udder is 21% more higher chance of dying through to marking, from lambing through to marking. So again, we've put all those inputs in for you to get pregnant, to have a lamb, but then to lose a lamb. We're losing it. We're losing our gains that we can be getting there. So, we may, by doing these kind of checks, we can cull those unfit animals before even joining and to improve our marking percentages and our weaning percentages, which can all improve your profitability of your flock. And studies have shown that economic modelling has found that it can be between $4 to $8 per ewe benefit from just doing these checks before joining. Okay, something I want to consider, especially when we're looking at rebuilding our flock, is not just culling on age alone. Like traditionally, we cast for age. Yep, that ewe's over that age, we're going to sell her off. But newer data is showing that age alone isn't a reliable indicator of reproductive success. We know that there can be other things that can complicate it with older ewes, right? In terms of they can be more prone to metabolic disease and those kind of things. But if we do our pre-joining checks and the ewes are managed well and of a healthy use, they can perform and add to our flock, right? They can be quite a valuable breeding proposition if we're wanting to increase our numbers, okay? If they're of good body condition score, and they've got a sound udder and they're of good health, they can add to our flock, right? I tend to find that if we looked at them and they were their body condition score is lower than our flock average by half a body condition score, we probably need to consider not joining them. But if they tick all the marks in terms of they're a greater than 2.7 body condition score, they've sound feet and udder and teeth, they can be a good addition to our flock, right? We just need to be aware that they do have the potential of a higher mortality, right? But if we do their checks, that can be reduced. But it can be a great strategy to build our flock, right? Okay. Older ewes, again, we need to, they can add to our flock for litter size. We know that as ewes get older, their litter size can increase, where it peaks around that 5 to 7 ages, right? But we do know that once they, we do get a declining as they go on conception rate and also rearing ability. Once they get over that 7 years of age, we can start to see that decrease, right? But by doing our checks in terms of body condition score and teeth, we can make sure, and soundness, we can make sure that they are fit to join and they can add to our flock, right? So as long as they're sound and well conditioned, I think there can be a good addition to our joining flock. There. So something that you can do is be, it's good to go to the yards with a good checklist, right? And having what are my non-negotiables, right? What am I striking out? So I think a two-strike rule works well, right? So in terms of if we've got an older ewe, but she's got a sound udder, she's good body condition score, she's holding her condition and her teeth may not be perfect. Maybe keep her in there, right? If a ewe's extremely lame, with a chronic foot abscess, is not going to get around. She's going to be more prone to metabolic diseases during lambing. And if she's of poor condition, you might want to cull her, right? So they're all kind of step throughs that you can be looking at to make those decisions as you're going through them, right? You do want to be considering doing these checks in advance of joining, right? But this MLA fit to join checklist is a good one to have in your pocket to have a look at to help you make those decisions, right? And it's all your decisions, no one else's, in terms of what you're willing to have as your non-negotiables for your joining flock. Okay. So we were speaking quickly about whether they're, we've got lameness, okay? I tend to find with lameness, it may not be an issue to get them to conceive, but it all can be where we get those weight losses, they and greater risk of pregnancy toxemia around that late pregnancy period, right? Where we see the biggest impact of this. So do I want to put all my inputs into a severely lame ewe that I don't think is going to carry through? Maybe I'm better off to put her in the cull more, right? The key is to make that decision early, but also some mild lamenesses you can treat very quickly and safely and get them over it and get them up to joining ability. Like they might be an early abscess or a seedy toe or something like that that you can input have an influence in quickly, treat, manage, get them nutrition back up and going and get them ready to join. Whereas severe lameness, we might be better off to cull that and get rid of that ewe and take her out of my joining flock. Again, it's just having that information to make those decisions. Okay. Especially when I'm AI sheep, we spend all day looking at udders because they're right in our faces. And the amount of udder issues we see can be in some flocks can be quite high, other flocks quite low. But if they don't have a sound udder, they're not able to carry that lamb through. And we've put those, like I said, we've put all those inputs in, we've got that ewe pregnant, she's conceived, she's lambed, but then that lamb dies. It's a lot of a waste of our inputs. Now, a lot of times I get asked, when is the best time to do this? Ideally, 4 to 6 weeks after weaning, because some issues don't show up straight away. It can be in that post-weaning period, we get a bit of mastitis and that coming up. Now, this is hands-on. You've got to have get your hands on there and have a feel. It can be just a quick palpate on there, or it can be shearing time, asking your shearers to have a quick look if they're willing to do that, and culling anything out that has major defects, right? Okay. We know that your researchers found that at about 5% of ewes have udder defects. My perception is some flocks have higher percentages of that, some flocks lower percentages of that. But we know these ewes wean about 11 kilos less lamb on average, right? And those lambs born out of those ewes are about 3 to 4 times more likely to die. So we're losing a lot there. Okay. When you're feeling the udder should be soft in texture. It should be consistent in size between the two sides. Where I found an unsound udder, you can feel lumps or bumps. There can be hardening up that teat canal, and they're really uneven. All right. So getting hands-on and getting rid of those ewes may be an option, in it. Sometimes people make that choice is if they've got a half an udder, they're happy to join them. Okay. But again, if I've got a ewe with half an udder and I've got a high twinning rate, we can lose more of those twins, right? So it's again to looking at how ruthless you want to be within your flock and what's feasible. Okay.
Mick, I'm just going to jump in with a question we've had being
Yeah.
texted. What about a big udder? So this person's texted in, I've been culling hard for weird shaped udders and when we go through the mobs at mutton time, but leaving really big udders in if they are soft.
I agree with that. Big udders that are soft, it's lumps or bumps in that. Just think about those ewes with some of those bigger udders have been stretched out. They've had lots of lambs. They've reared lots of lambs. As long as there's no lumps and bumps. The other thing to have a look at in big udders is, those real big teats? We call them bottle teats, where if you push on the udder, you can see that teat just gets huge, right? I worry about those teats because a lamb being able to actually get its mouth on and suckle. I'll give an example. One year I flushed a whole heap of embryos and someone had a whole heap of recipients programmed that they purchased in. Again, they assume the udders were all good like we usually do, but I had about 50% of those udders had bottle teats, and I didn't want to use them. We did have to use a couple of them with the amount of embryos that we had, but none of those ewes reared a lamb with those teats. But they're the kind of things. Big udder, not a problem. Lumps and bumps, hardness, a problem. Okay, and teat size. So if they get really like big triangle kind of shape, or in a lamb's mouth just can't get onto it. Okay, so I hope I've answered your question there. So the other thing to think about for joining success, we know that body condition is one of our strongest predictors of joining success. Think of it as like that fuel tank for fertility, lambing ease, milk supply. And also, we know that that ewe can have an influence of the performance, the lifetime performance of that offspring. So if we don't set her up to have that good placental development and supply of that offspring, we're going to be affecting the lifetime performance of her offspring and our performance of our flock. So ideally, we want a body condition score of 2.7 to 3.3 gives the best results. Okay. And if they're too lean, we tend to find ovulation drops. And likewise, if they're too fat, conception drops off. And we see an increase in lambing problems as well. So, we want them within that middle. Okay. So the best time again is when we're doing our udder check is also to be thinking or doing it in that 6 to 10 weeks before joining to do a bit of a check if they're coming through for shearing or something like that. Just have a quick look at them because it means we can then put something in place to maybe rebuild the condition, changing our nutrition a little bit to actually put on that extra even half a body condition score before we put them out to joining. Because we know even any extra body condition score at joining can increase our conception rate and also our twinning rate. You don't need to feel every ewe, but you can even just get an idea by checking 25 to 50 ewes in a group just to try and make that decisions for that mob and where you want to manage them. Okay. It's all about identifying those risks early so we can make changes, right? Yeah. So, and I also think if we've got, you might want to be looking at those used when your body condition score. And if you're seeing a few that are lower, you might want to draft a few of those lower ones off that are like a body condition, full body condition score lower than the rest of them to maybe to look in to them, maybe check their teeth closer, check their if they're for any lameness or anything like that. Just drafting them off as you go if you want to look into them further, that you may want to give them an extra attention to get them up, or see if you think it's worthwhile doing that within those lower body condition score use. Okay. So as we know from this is from the Lifetime Wool Project, which gave us great information. We can see there's that clear relationship between sheep reproduction and ewe body condition score. So as it rises, so does that reproduction rate, right? And also increases with our number of twins. And we know with an extra body condition score that we can have it joining, we can actually get an extra 20 lambs per 100 ewes joined. So an extra 20%, right? Roughly ballpark, right? So again, we're lifting our ovulation rate. We've got a lower percentage of embryo loss as well. And we've got fitter ewes, which meaning we're having more and better quality lambs dropped on the ground. Okay. Also, when we're body condition scoring, something else to think about in our younger ewes, like our maiden ewes, is making sure they're up to that pre-joining weight. Right, young ewes, not we're not talking ewe lambs here, we're talking our maiden ewes, we're hogger, and that we want them to be 90% of their body weight at their first prior to joining, because we know that that can increase their can maximize their conception rates, right? Ewes that we join in those lower body condition scores, they're unlikely to gain that extra condition during pregnancy. And are a higher risk of mortality at lambing, right? So under condition ewes that are joined, we get lower conception, lower lambing percentages, the greater risk of metabolic disease and mortality, and we get reduced lamb survivability and also ewe longevity. Okay, so they're just some kind of things to consider, which most of you guys would be when you're looking at your mobs when you're putting your rams out. But if you can do it that little bit earlier, maybe we can put some changes into place. Okay, now also looking at teeth, okay, we need a sound mouth that ewe's got to be able to eat, convert nutrition, and that is so that they can not only conceive, but they can grow a lamb and they can lactate for a lamb. It all drives those fertility and reproductive performance. Now, when I'm checking teeth, I don't tend to recommend it in younger ewes unless I'm seeing an issue. But in older ewes, especially if they're falling behind in condition, like our lighter ewes, if they may have worn teeth, misaligned, they're not getting that. They're struggling to recover post-weaning and maintaining their weight. It might be a clear indication to cull her. But if we've got an older ewe that's holding her condition, her mouth isn't perfect, but her mouth is working, maybe that's a good idea to keep her in the flock. The only time I highly recommend checking younger ewes is we sometimes can see when they're really underweight or this drought affected, right? Where we've got to give them a lot more supplementations and those kind of things, that it may be an indication on those kind of ewes to maybe check a few of those lighter younger ewes just to make sure they're all right, right? Yeah, so if we're checking mouth, we want to make sure we're checking ewes maybe that are over 5 years, especially if they're, greater than half a body condition score below the rest of the mob. If an older ewe is in good condition, she's unlikely to have any dental issues, so I probably wouldn't concentrate on checking those. And again, younger ewes that are under 4 years of age, unless they're greater than a condition score below the rest of the mob, I probably wouldn't even be bothering looking and checking those. Okay. Now, often, and when I'm talking to a lot of people, we're talking about the percentage of the rams to put out, right? Now, something to consider when you're putting rams out, it's what works best for you. Now, these ram percentages that I'm going to talk about, they're kind of like the minimum that you want to be doing. And it can vary depending on your mob sizes, paddock sizes, and what whether you're doing out of season joining or in season joining, or whether you're synchronizing those ewes at all, because that can all change with what percentages we recommend. So as a basic rule, I tend to say mature ewes, 1% plus one. So if I've got 200 ewes, we want two plus our spare, our three. You tend to want a few extra, like about four rams in there, just sometimes to just to account for if anything's not working or anything like that, a bit of bullying between your rams. Now, in our maiden ewes, you want to increase that percentage, and ewe lambs again, we want a high percentage in those, right? One thing to think about is younger ewes tend to have a quite a short saddle heat, right? And so it can be quite short. So you, by having more rams in, we're more likely to pick it up, right? Which is extremely important in our ewe lambs, which I'll talk about in more detail in some coming up slides, right? But if we're looking at doing ewes that are younger ewes, you don't always want to use younger rams with them. They're not as experienced, right? You can see it when you put your old ewes out, your rams out with your older ewes. They tend to mob the ram, you know? They know what the job is, they know what needs to be done. Younger ewes can be a bit more standoffish, and younger rams not 100% sure of what their job is just yet, right? So I would tend to avoid putting my younger stage groups together. Right, just for those reasons, for the saddle heat and the inexperience, right? Older rams, they tend to be a lot better at picking up the saddle heat in those younger age groups, right? The other thing to think about is if we're synchronizing our ewes, right, we can have a lot more ewes coming into heat in a short period. So we want to increase our ram percentage to compensate for that, to make sure all those ewes can get cycled and we can tighten up our window of joining, right? To have, so we've got then that recovery period, a shorter lactation, better weaning, and all but better marking because lambs aren't as spread out. So it's all about thinking about those things going forward, which we're going to talk about in some of our future webinars that we've got planned. But by having that, if we're going to be having that synchronization there, we need to be thinking about having a higher ram percentage out there, right? So, in stunts, when we start talking about synchronization and all that, we need to understand the seasonability of sheep. Okay, sheep are seasonal breeders. They respond to the day length as it decreases after the summer solstice, so the 22nd of December. So that's when you start to naturally cycle. Understand where we've got some breeds that are more seasonal than others. So our merinos and dorpers are less affected by this versus our border Leicesters and British breeds, which can be are a lot more seasonal, right? So as what happens, as that day length shortens, they have an increase in melatonin, right? Which then influences them and influences them to cycle, right? So as that, what we call the photo period becomes shorter, the day length shortened, they increase that production. As some of you might have heard of products like melatonin, which is a regulant, which is an implant that can mimic it to try and trick the ewes into thinking that the day lengths are shortening, right? So we can use such products like melatonin to do that. That's an implant that you put in just behind the ear about 30 to 40 days before joining, and it can mimic that peak breeding season, right? I tend to find that you don't, in more seasonal breeds, you can't like bring them to, like your Border Leicester. I wouldn't be looking at using melatonin to bring them up to a November joining. I tend to find we can bring them maybe a month and a half earlier to, with optimum conception rates and lambing rates. But wanting to go further out, it just doesn't work as well. Now, this product isn't cheap and it's not going to work for everyone. But it works in terms of I think it costs around that $7.50 dose. So it's adding quite a bit more to our joining. I do have a few people that are using it in for our reproduction programs where we've got elite ewes that we're bringing earlier, but also with some ewe lamb joining. But again, I wouldn't be looking at bringing ewe lamb joining into before that solstice because we do know something to be aware of. For puberty, ewes need to experience that lengthening day length, right, up to Christmas time, and then the decreasing rain lengths to stimulate their first oestrus. So that's why we really can't bring ewe lambs into that November, December period with good results because they just don't have that stimulus for their first oestrus, right? So if we're talking about that out of season joining, right, what we're trying to do is that's all our period from our October, November, December joining. We tend to need to use extra rams to go in with them to have that stimulus for those ewes. Some people are using teasers, which I'll talk more about teasers, to stimulate them to cycle, right? With what we call the ram effect, okay? Rams going in, they can stimulate those ewes to cycle, and we can also get a bit of synchrony of estrus, which I'll talk a bit about, okay? So there's some things that we can do to mitigate it, but they're just some of the few things we can think about by understanding the seasonality of sheep and their natural breeding. Okay, so when we're talking about that ram effect, it happens when ewes are suddenly exposed to rams, okay, after a period of isolation. Some studies have even shown that we can have a ram effect by even putting in fresh rams in there, ones that haven't been exposed to before as well, can have that similar stimulation effect, right? And it's all about the pheromones and the visual cues that trigger these ewes actually to ovulate. Right? So, but often with that first ovulation in that out of season breeding, they ovulate, but they don't have outward signs of oestrus. So rams can't detect that they're in oestrus, so don't always join them. And that happens usually 1 to 2 days after the rams go in or our teasers go in. So they have what we call a silent heat. So they ovulate, but no outward signs of oestrus that a ram can't detect it, right? So, but again, when we do that, again, about 50% of those ewes will do the same thing around day 7 to 9, right? So we're starting to get that synchrony, right? And remember, a ewe's estrus, well, this cycle is 17 days. So 17 days after that, the rams first go in about that 1 to 2 days after that first silent heat, they'll then cycle again around day 19. And the other 50% that had that short estrus and cycled around that day 7 and 9 will then do that again around day 25, right? So what we tend to find is by we're teasing our ewes by whether we're using vasectomized rams, which are rams that have had their vas deferens cut out. So they're essentially a ram without the shooting blanks, essentially, right? Or we can have Rupel treated wethers. So they're wethers that have been injected with testosterone, right? Now, you've got to be aware that if you're using testosterone injected into wethers, they can't be sold for slaughter, right? For human consumption ever, because it's an off-label use, right? So that's something to consider there, right? So I tend to recommend teasing for 14 days. Right, to get rid of those two poor ovulations, no outward signs of estrus. Not all ewes will do that. We will get some ewes cycling, but a lot of them won't, right? And then put our rams in after that and join for whatever joining period I'm doing. Usually I recommend 35 days, so two cycles, right? Some people aren't doing the teasing effect, and we've got that with our few scanning. They're just doing a longer joining period, not that 5 week joining, maybe doing a 6, 7 week joining where the RAM's having that effect, right? Now, if you're doing that, there is some things that you can do in terms of if you want to for recovery and lambing and marking, maybe doing an early and late scanning in your scanning program. Right. So there's some of those things that you can consider. If you are using vasectomized rams, you need to take them out when your rams go in. They're rams. They're going to be fighting. They're going to be fighting with your rams you want doing the job. And I tend to find they have a chip on their shoulder sometimes, right? You've also got to be considering that you've got the same shearing costs for shearing them because they are rams, and you're managing more rams as well. Now, even though Ropel treated wethers can't be sold for slaughter, you can leave them in there when your rams go in, right? Especially if you're doing just the one-off 5 mil injection of the Ropel 7 days before they go in with the ewes. They can stay in and just be drafted off when your rams come out. So there's those considerations that you need to have if you're thinking about using teasers, to be thinking about the pros and cons and what's going to work in your system in terms of that, right? Now, a percentage of teasers to go in, I tend to recommend 0.5% to 1%. So that's one teaser per 100 or 200 ewes, right? In my artificial breeding programs, I tend to recommend a lot higher, but that's because I've got all ewes coming on at the same time. So now the difference between, I often get asked, is there a difference between Ropel treated wethers and vasectomized rams? In commercial mating programs, we have not found a difference, right? They're both the same. I tend to find in young ewes, no data for you, but more my from what I'm seeing come through in results, but I don't have solid data for you. In our younger ewes, I tend to find that ram, vasectomized rams have a better effect, but I think it's sometimes because people are using young wethers. Not we don't ha tend to run that wether flock where we've got those old stinky wethers around. And most of the research that has been done comparing Ropel treated wethers with vasectomized rams has all been done where we're using those stinky old wethers as teasers. So there's some considerations to be thinking about there.
I'll just
Okay.
jump in, Nick, with a question we've had. Can you expand as to why you can't sell the wethers after they've had the injection?
It's because it is a hormone, okay? It is testosterone, and it is what's been the APVMA, which is our overriding body, says that anything's been treated with testosterone, and it's a higher dose, can't be sold for slaughter. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So they're just some things to be thinking about if you're thinking about using teasers. So teasers are about stimulating out of season breeding, or in young ewes, stimulating to have their first estrus. So they're just some considerations with how that's working. Something where I get a lot of questions about is joining length, right? And how long to put the rams out. You guys need to make the decision what works for your system. Okay. I tend to recommend a 35-day joining period because then it allows for a shorter lactation period that they're lactating off. We can have a tighter marking period. We give our ewes a longer recovery period to get back up into joining again. But it what works within your system, right? Because after 35 days, we only tend to get a small percentage increase in reproductive rate. You may deem it worthwhile. If you're doing out of season joining and you're not teasing, I recommend going a bit longer because we're going to get that ram effect when your rams go in. So maybe go longer there, okay? But again, it's all about what works within your joining system and what time of year you're joining in. For that shorter joining period, I'd be thinking about the positive impacts of a more compact lambing, easier management for marking, and that better recovery. But again, It depends on what works within your system. Okay. Something I get asked a lot about is flush feeding, right? And this can be, we're looking at two things here, right? We're looking at where we're feeding ewes with lupins, whether we're doing that to increase like ovulation rate to get the higher ovulation rate. And we're also doing it to get that, we can also be doing it to be getting that weight gain, okay, to get that nutritional change, which that short-term rise, we can see that that can have a good effect again, also on ovulation rate, right? So what we can do here is I recommend for flush feeding is 500 grams of lupins per ewe per day for 7 days pre-joining and 7 days post-joining. Now you can either do that with feeding out daily or every second day or every third day, or putting them out onto an ungrazed lupin stubble, right? Be aware at certain times of year and what your lupins are, because I am starting to see a bit of lupinosis with the humidity that we've had this season in some areas around the state. So be aware of that as well. So by feeding that, right, we're stimulating our ewes to ovulate, right? Now, we've seen with research over the years, and a lot of really good stuff was done during the 80s, right, that we can get that increase in ovulation, but it can be variable between flocks, right? It can be highly variable. Now, if you use a condition score 4+, we're not going to get that weight gain. We're not going to get that stimulus, right, with it. So we tend to find we get it more effective in ewes that may be on a bit of that lighter side, where we're able to lift them up a bit and get that increase. But we also find that it can have an influence on what those ewes were like 6 months ago, because that's when the follicles are all getting kind of engaged and that for that full follicular genesis kind of thing, where those follicles are getting engaged to come in, right? Some of them will fall away. But by giving this stimulus, we can have a recovery if they've had a poor time 6 months ago as well, which is really important to be considering. But just be aware that with flush feeding, we can get a variability in ovulation rate and lambing rate. And a lot of that depends on your body condition score that they're in at the time and also what they were like, right? So we just tend to find if ewes are under that body condition score of, in the early threes, we tend to get a better response, right? And I tend to find if ewes are in the poorer body condition scores, if it can be fed daily rather than twice weekly, we can get a better response as well out of that. Okay. And we can get a higher rate of twinning rate. Okay. So it's all about short term. Because of the way that the lupins, which stimulates ovulation, right? I don't like it going past those 7 days, right? Because what we tend to find is that effect to stimulate to ovulate can have a negative effect on the conception. So I've seen it before when I've AI'd ewes and I've had clients put 50% out on an oat stubble, 50% out on a fresh lupin stubble where I've just AI'd them. I've seen a 20% difference in conception rate in those mobs, right? But if but feeding up on lupins pre-joining can be a really good thing, and going to those first 7 days, right? I don't find much benefit going over that period. And that, but do your sums to see what works out within you. Okay. And it's all about those lighter ewes and picking them up so they're getting to that target. Okay. Now, a lot of people are looking at joining ewe lambs. Now, it can be good returns, but there's also a high risk, right? And it only works if you're guaranteed that you can meet these nutritional requirements, right? And you're going to put the inputs in. If you're not going to put those inputs in, I think you can see a lot of negative impacts on those ewe lambs, right? You've got to remember these ewe lambs are still growing themselves, but they've also got to support, conceive, support a pregnancy, lactate, and then do it all again next year. So it takes a lot of forward planning. And the decision needs to be made, like pre-weaning. Are you going to do it or not? Now, you need to be looking at your budget and set your target weights and monitor growth. If you're not going to be willing to do that or wanting to do that, really, I'd be really sitting back and considering whether I want to join YU Lambs. There is on the MLA website, which I've got a link on later on, where you can go in and put some of your targets in there, put in some of the costs, and then work out if it's going to be a feasible plan for you, right? So the first thing is we want those ewe lambs post-weaning to be gaining weight to hit their target joining weight, which merinos, we want 70% of their standard reference weight. So standard reference weight is adult ewe, non-pregnant, bare shorn, right? And be looking at that, all 45 kilos, and crossbreds, it can be a little bit less, right? So you want to make sure that they're growing post-weaning to meet those target weights. We find body condition score isn't as much of a driver, but body condition score is important for that the lamb development within that uterus. So don't ignore it, but it's not a key driver. We also need to make sure that they're continuing to grow during that joining and during that pregnancy, right? If those lambs are underweight and they're not continuing to grow, your reproductive rate will not be good, right? And you may have lost an opportunity and actually had them to go backwards, right? So it's important to do that, to do your figures, to work out the supplementary feeding you're going to have. Is it too costly? Am I don't have the time? Do I not have the resources? Just be thinking about that. Okay, and it's all about that attention to detail. If you're uncertain about being able to meet those nutritional requirements, I'd skip it and join them as maidens, right? But again, be thinking about those things when you're looking at that, making those decisions. So, like I've said before, ewe lambs rarely cycle before January because they've got experience the lengthening day lengths and the shortening day lengths. They do best to be joined in the peak of the natural breeding season. So that March period is when a lot of people look at joining it and we're getting good results around them. Admittedly, I have used some Regulin in some terminal breeds to bring them a bit earlier, but the earliest wells we were willing to go was end of January, early February. Right, but not going before. I talk people out of trying to go in December because I just don't think we're going to get those results, right? Now, the other thing is having a really, remember I was talking about have such a short, subtle heat? You need to have a higher ram ratio. No, we want it over 2%, ideally 3%. The more the better, right? And the more experienced, rams they are better apt at picking up that short, subtle heat. If the younger the rams you are using, the higher percentage I recommend. Also, because they have that short, subtle heat, it's also better off to have them in a smaller paddock where they're not spread out as much so they don't get missed. Okay. The other thing is, it's really important, I think, to use teasers if I'm using ewe lambs, just to get that synchrony to stimulate that first estrus, right, before I put my rams in. Again, it's a call you want to make. Each thing that you kind of go, no, I don't want to do that, be thinking I may be get, I've got to accept a lower conception rate and reproductive rate. Then the next step is to be looking at that post-joining period to make sure that we've got that ongoing growth and during that joining and during that pregnancy and during that lactation. Because we've got a plan that those ewes can recover post-weaning for their next joining. The biggest downfall I've seen for that next year of joining is where it's been missed in that nutrition during pregnancy, during lactation, and then that recovery period. So those ewes just aren't up to weight for their next joining. And we're seeing that reduced reproductive performance in that next year. And there is some perception that we're going to be getting that performance of that you affected over a lifespan if we're not meeting those targets, right? So it's been thinking about those targets, saying I'm feasible to meet those targets, and we're willing to put those inputs in to meet those targets. Okay. So we've seen with some research coming through that it's not only our joining weight, but also that live weight change during pregnancy, right? The better that we can put on more weight during that pregnancy, the better conception rates we're getting and lambing rates we're getting out of those ewes, right? If the other thing to consider is if we don't have our joining weights right, we're also seeing that we're getting bigger lambing issues at the other end. Those ewes that are smaller at joining that may conceive, we're seeing a lot higher percentage of lambing difficulties. And then we've kind of lost that opportunity with all those inputs we've put in if we don't meet those targets, right? So the main thing I kind of think about when we're talking about ewe lamb is don't do it half baked and use that MLA tool to make sure that to help you make those economic decisions to see if it's feasible within your system. Because at the end of the day, it's not only the success of weaning a live lamb out of a ewe lamb, it's having that ewe lamb fit to join in the next year. So hitting that weight, that growth, that condition, all those we don't want to compromise on. Because as soon as we make a compromise, we're affecting that fertility of that ewe and potentially her lifetime performance. I always like to think of it as every kilo gives us an extra 3 to 5% reproductive rate within our ewes, and we can see that can give us better outcomes. And if we can feed for at least 100 grams per day during our joining, we can lift our scanning rate by 20%, right? So and at our hog at joining, we really want that ewe to be 90% of the standard reference rate, so that adult weight. So we need to make sure that they're continuing to grow and that all the way through. Bearing in mind that a twin bearing ewe lamb will have about 14 to 15 kilos within her of placenta and fetus. Okay, if we're doing our weights during key points during it, just be thinking about that. At a twin bearing ewe near term, will have that much extra weight in fetuses within her. Okay, so now we've done all those things. We've got all our joining done. We've got our date. Our rams are going out. It's a perfect opportunity to go, okay, I've done all that hard work. Rams are out there doing the job. I'm happy with everything. Now I can be thinking about my next step, which is pregnancy scanning, if I'm going to do it, right? So it's a good opportunity. You know your rams, the day your rams go in, you've got your projected, your rams are coming out, you've got your number of ewes that you join. It's a good opportunity then to ring your pregnancy scanner to lock in dates, to give them the details to get you on the runs if you're going to scan, right? Remember, we can detect pregnancy from scanning from 45 days of pregnancy, but our optimum time for picking up multiples is around that approximately 90 days of pregnancy. So by giving your scanning contractor the days that your rams go in, it means they can work out the optimum time to scan your ewes to give you the best information, right? So we're going to talk more in some future webinars, like how using that information and different scanning strategies. But something I wanted to talk about that even if you are scanning, if you're considering within your system maybe to join dry ewes, think about that early scan sometimes. And if you want to join those dry ewes, okay, especially with the lamb prices that they are, depending on what your system allows for and what you want to do. But some of those things you may want to be considering, right? So, yeah. So, just to my key take home messages, first off, fit to join. If yous are fit to join, they're our foundation to reproductive success. So you only want to join sound, healthy yous that have good udders, are able to get around, get their nutrition of good body condition score to give us as many live lambs on the ground that we can get through to weaning. The preparation needs to start well in advance of our rams going in. And I didn't touch on it in this webinar, but also checking your rams before they go in. If that doesn't happen on the day the rams go out, we really need to be thinking about that well in advance, because remembering the spermatogenesis cycle in rams is 59 days from production to ejaculation. So we need to be thinking about those several months in advance, and likewise our ewes, right? If you're going to be joining ewe lambs, do your sums and assess your systems, and only do it if you can meet those nutrition and growth targets can be met. And don't leave the decision too late, okay? Otherwise, it can be a lost opportunity. Plan your joining strategically, thinking about seasonality, when you're doing things, what works in your system, when's the best time to lamb so that you can get your lambs off to market, your paddock availability, and all those kind of things. And what strategies will fit best within your system? Is it using teasers? Is it using a high ram percentage? Is it flush feeding? All those kind of things. Is it having a tighter joining period? And also, I think measure your outcomes, booking your pregnancy scanning early, just so that we can maximize our lamb survivability. And sometimes it allows us to assess before we're marking, to think, oh, look, I kind of half did that this year. What can I improve on? Because the conception rate is like this. So you can forward plan, and having that information allows you to plan and have, it's all about controlling what we can control, because there's so many things we can't. Okay. So, and then I've just got here just some resources for you guys if anyone's interested. The Fit to Join from MLA, the MLA Joining Ewe Lamb Decision Tool, the Lifetime Wall within AWI, and Preparing for Joining Success and Joining on the AWI website. So, they're just some resources if anyone wants to go to. And I hope that information is good and it's given you guys a few things to think about.
Thank you, Mick. I'm just had another question come in. It was about udders again, and it was what causes massive udders in ewes and that have just slammed, how to combat this. I'm gonna guess she meant bottle teats there. Correct me if I'm
Yeah.
wrong, but I think.
Okay. There's several thoughts behind it, right? Some of it can be certain genetic lines. They are more prone to it, because it's mainly, we learned this from a lot of the dairy industry, right? Because they're looking at udders all the time because of that. And we have found that in the dairy industry, there is a strong correlation with those deformed udders and with genetics, right? Sometimes it can be milk production. Sometimes you can even see lumps and bumps on the teats as well, but that can be if there was a bit of scabby mouth around during lambing, and ewes chewing on those teats a bit as well. Some of those, as long as we feel like the ewe lamb can get on that teat, it'll be not a problem. We also tend to see those bigger teats sometimes on those higher lactating ewes. All right. So, big milk producers, which we want, but there can be also that correlation to having those teats as well.
So in summary, there's not a lot you can do about a bottle teat prevention wise.
Nothing.
And
Nothing. Nah. Sorry.
now feel free if anyone else wants to mute. Yeah, more than welcome to jump in. But that was great, Mick. I know I took lots of notes through that. Give it a couple of minutes. Otherwise.
Tiff, we had a couple of those questions come in before the webinar,
Yeah, well,
I
I think
think.
we touched a
You
few, but
mentioned
I'll
those
run
two.
through a few of them here. were on we had what is, when is the best time to feed supplementary calcium to replace calcium lost in lactation? That was a question we had, which
Okay, so when we're thinking about calcium, right? Okay, calcium is low in our grains, okay, and fodder crops as well, cereal crops, fodder cereal crops, and it can create that negative calcium balance, right? So a lot of times when I'm talking to people, when they put their ewes into confinement, they've got their calcium out there, they're like, oh shit, they're just devouring it, they're eating bucket loads, this is going to cost me a fortune. But I always think they're going in there and they're correcting it to start off with, and then it settles down. So in WA, we still feed a lot of cereals during our summers, right? And that is going to be depleting their calcium. So in confinement and confirmed pregnancy, I'd be thinking about having my calcium supplementation out to counter that calcium negative balance they've been on, because they've been drawing it from their bones, right? To equilibrate it, right? Sorry, stumbling over my words. So, and what we tend to find also, because we do long-term grain or a lot of supplementary feeding, we also tend to find once ewes get over 6 years of age, they've depleted quite a bit over time and they don't have as much. Though I tend to find a higher incidence of hypocalcemia in those age bracket ewes. And no amount of treatment sometimes brings those 6, 7 year old ewes back from that, right? So it's just be thinking about what they've been fed on. So, and our cereal grains are really poor for it.
Another pre-submitted question. I know you did touch this, but I'll get you to answer it, I suppose, in summary, because I know he was really keen to hear the answer to this. Do teasers injected with testosterone produce more lambs? Is it actually worth the time and money, or am I better off investing in lupins to improve condition of the ewes pre-joining?
Okay, we've got two factors here, right? For one thing, with teasers, we're trying to synchronize those ewes, right, to be able to do it, so to get them into estrus, right? But when we're feeding the lupins, we're trying to stimulate ovulation, right? So I'd be asking, what time of year are you joining? How long is your joining period? So if you're putting your rams out for shorter periods, right, I might be investing in lupins there, or well, longer periods. I might be looking at lifting that ovulation rate, right? But if I want a shorter joining in that out of season joining period, and I want to do 5 weeks, maybe teasers are been doing it. The best benefits with some research that has been done in, I think, the southern area of arid kind of areas, sorry, of South Australia, was finding that they both had a cumulative effect by doing both, right? In terms of out of season joining. So there's those kind of questions I'd be asking, right? We know that we can lift the ovulation rate if my ewes are lighter by flush feeding with lupins as well. So
Are there any benefits to mating in confinement?
Okay, the main benefit for a smaller area, I would be mainly in new lambs, right? I'd be more, I don't really find that there is any great benefit of it. It just would be more the nutrition with it, okay? What am I nutritionally feeding them? Am I giving them too high? Are they higher body condition score in that area? So there is no studies that I'm aware of that show that there's any benefit to joining in confinement.
When ewe lambs are joined early, e.g., 7 months of age, would there be any benefit in mixing the ewe lambs with the older experienced ewes at lambing?
In terms of them training them and teaching them what to do, I tend to like my ewe lambs lambing as ewe lamb groups, right? Because sometimes those old girls can cause a bit of disruption. They're not teaching them or training them, in my opinion. But yeah, I don't see any great benefit in doing that.
I just want to confirm that the joining of my ewe lambs isn't going to shorten the effective breeding life of these same ewes in later life.
So I think I kind of touched on that, but it's all about meeting those targets so that we don't affect them in later life. What I tend to find is where people are saying it's affected them, it's where we haven't really met those targets or put those inputs to get that growth, to get that meeting those weight targets, which is affecting them, right? But we've also got to remember with ewe lambs, they're putting a lot of inputs in that. A lamb out of a ewe lamb may not necessarily, if we don't put all these inputs in, have the lifetime performance of a lamb out of an adult ewe, right? Because we know that that placental environment, that in utero environment during pregnancy can affect the lifetime performance with the follicular development and also within that lamb. Okay. So it's been thinking about those kind of things.
And then again, something you've touched on, but is there any value in using teasers for Merino February mating?
Unless I wanted to get really, really tight, I wouldn't be pushing it. Younger ewes, yes, I would. But my usual age groups, unless I just wanted to try and get it really tight, I wouldn't be bothering.
All right, that question's for me. Are the webinars available to watch again? Absolutely. We send them out as a webinar format, but also as a podcast format. Let me just check your submitted
And
question.
if there's any questions people have afterwards listening to it or anything like that, don't hesitate to reach out. Flick me a text. And I spend a lot of time driving at this time of year between properties, so I can usually get back to people then.
Awesome. That's all of the submitted questions. Thank you so much,
No
Mick.
worries.
That was amazing.
Cool.
Thanks for your time and thanks for everyone who jumped on. Hopefully, you all got something out of it. No doubt something different. We all do every time we walk away from something like this, but really appreciate your time. Thank you.
No, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, and always enjoy chatting about sheep and breeding and all those kind of things. So, anytime.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for those who jumped on for the webinar and for those who are listening now. I've included the link to the survey in the show notes as the survey really helps us distinguish what you want to see, what you want to hear, what webinar topics you want to listen to. You'll also find the survey in the bio of our social media platforms and on our website. The Livestock Collective is a not-for-profit organization dedicated to providing information and building capacity across the supply chain. Our work spans a range of educational projects, including content on our website, active engagement on social media, and attending events across the country. Our capacity building efforts include initiatives like this project, leadership workshops, and so much more. And so, if you know someone you want to hear from, you should send them our way.